The Jewish High Holy Days began this year on September 13th with Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and then last Tuesday was Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, which completes the 10-day period of the Days of Awe. To all the Jews in the congregation, Happy New Year, Lashana Tova. According to Jewish tradition, God inscribes each person's fate for the coming year into a book, the Book of Life, on Rosh Hashanah, and waits until Yom Kippur to seal the verdict. During the Days of Awe, a Jewish person tries to amend his or her behavior and seek forgiveness for wrongs done against God and against other human beings. The evening and day of Yom Kippur are set aside for public and private petitions and confessions of guilt. At the end of Yom Kippur, one hopes that they have been forgiven by God. I appreciate the opportunity at this time of year to focus on forgiveness. It is a complicated topic, all bound up with other thorny theological matters like sin and atonement and salvation. I preach on forgiveness around the Jewish High Holy Days each year because I believe it is one of the most important spiritual concepts for us to grapple with. We can all probably agree that forgiveness is a good thing. If we took a poll, most of us would come down on the side of pro-forgiveness. Some people's lives are marked by lifelong wrestling with forgiveness. All of us have numerous, sometimes daily, opportunities to practice forgiving other people and forgiving ourselves. It can often be harder to forgive ourselves. We are our harshest critics sometimes, aren't we? At its core, forgiveness is about restoring a broken connection. It is the process by which we release the barriers we have constructed around our heart. These barriers hold us separate from one another and even divide us up within ourselves. The word atonement, broken down, is at-one-ment, the state of being as one. Forgiveness is the way we return to our original blessed state of oneness. I've come to understand that forgiveness is the most powerful and direct route to our own joy and wholeness and even our enlightenment. How many of you have gone to a church where the Lord's Prayer was recited each week? That's a lot of us. But even if you didn't, I think most of us are at least casually familiar with it. The Lord's Prayer is one of the most often repeated prayers in the world. The story behind it is that his disciples, recognizing his spiritual mastery, asked Jesus the very best way to pray. They wanted a prayer that covered all the bases and hit all the important sacred points. In response, he taught them what we now know of as the Lord's Prayer. But remember that Jesus didn't speak English. When the prayer was finally captured on papyrus decades after his death, it was not written in the King's English. It was first passed down in the language that Jesus spoke, Aramaic. From there, it was translated into Greek, and much later into Latin, and then all the various languages spoken in the Christian world. In all those translations, it would be impossible not to lose some of the subtle tones of meaning from the original words. Biblical scholars have gone back and studied the Aramaic to try to better understand the intent and the nuance of the ancient texts. One scholar, Neil Donald Klotz, has taken the Lord's Prayer and retranslated it from the Aramaic, giving several possible alternate renderings of each of the phrases. I found that reading through these different translations has made that prayer come alive again for me. So if religious language is not your thing, if Christianity has left a bad taste in your mouth, I understand. But I encourage you to listen even more carefully, as you would to poetry. Take the line, "Forgive us our sins as we forgive those who have sinned against us." The author writes, "Besides forgive, the root of that first word may also be translated, return to its original state, reciprocally absorb, reestablish slender ties to, and embrace with emptiness. The word used in the book of Luke that is translated as sins can also be rendered as failures, mistakes, accidental offenses, frustrated hopes, or tangled threads, the latter implying that some mending or restoration is needed. Klotz says that the prayer reaffirms that our original state is clear and unburdened, one where our slender ties to creation are based on mutual releasing with every breath we breathe. Perhaps for you, like for me, the prayer has become rote and overused to the point of losing almost all meaning. Yet I believe prayer can be a powerful instrument of intention. So listen to the poetry and the layers of meaning in these alternate phrases. Loose the cords of mistakes binding us as we release the strands we hold of others' guilt. Forgive our hidden past, the secret shames, as we consistently forgive what others hide. Lighten our load of secret debts as we relieve others of their need to repay. Erase the inner marks our failures make just as we scrub our hearts of others' faults. Absorb our frustrated hopes and dreams as we embrace those of others with emptiness. Untangle the knots within so that we can mend our hearts' simple ties to others. And for the gardeners, compost our inner stolen fruit as we forgive others the spoils of their trespassing. For those of you who may be thinking that all this forgiveness and enlightenment talk is too airy-fairy or otherworldly for you, these ancient spiritual ideas are now backed up by hard science. Dr. Fred Luskin is a psychologist who has conducted clinical studies of forgiveness at Stanford University. His research and experience has led him to proclaim that forgiveness is a skill that anyone can learn and that people are happier and healthier when they can forgive. In his book, Forgive for Good, he breaks down the elements and the process of releasing a grudge. He says that forgiveness is the feeling of peace that emerges as you take your hurt less personally. It is the experience of peacefulness in the present moment. Forgiveness does not change the past, but it changes the present. It is for you and no one else. And I want to repeat that last part. It is for you and no one else. And then he makes the point that you can forgive and rejoin a relationship, or you can forgive and never speak to that person again. I think we often confuse forgiveness and reconciliation, but they are not the same. Reconciliation means you reestablish a relationship with a person who has hurt you. And forgiveness means you make peace with a bitter part of you or part of your past and no longer blame your present experiences or feelings on someone who has hurt or offended you. So you can forgive that person who hurt you all those years ago without condoning the hurtful thing that they did. And you can forgive that person and decide that you do not want to be in relationship with them. The act of forgiveness is under your own control. It is for you and no one else. But that's not to say it's easy. I remember once years ago, a woman whose father had abused her as a child came to my office and wanted to talk to me about her struggles with forgiveness. She was still very angry at him and told me his actions were unforgivable. And what could I say to someone who was harmed in this way as a little child? But I said that forgiveness does not mean she has to condone what her father did to her. Her life has been shaped by his mistreatment, her self-image, her sense of safety in the world, her willingness to be vulnerable. I suggested that it doesn't matter if her father deserves to be forgiven. That's not the point. Forgiveness is for her. It's about letting go of the shroud that she had been holding over her heart. That oppressive dark layer that she believes is keeping her safe, but really is isolating her from feeling love in the present moment. And I told her that it may simply be impossible to restore the torn connections between her and her father. And for that lost relationship, she may simply need to mourn. In the words of the blog author, Real Live Preacher, he says, "Forgiveness does not always lead to a healed relationship. Some people are not capable of love, and it might be wise to let them go along with your anger. Wish them well and let them go their way." Or as Jack Kornfield said, "Forgiveness means giving up all hope of a better past." I asked a friend of mine to talk to me about how he has reconciled himself with his abusive mother. He said, "The more aware I become of my own fear and trauma, the more compassion I have for my mother, who acted out of that place a lot when I was a kid. And as I become more conscious of not acting out of my pain and fear, the memory of the hurt that I experienced from my mom acting out of that place becomes more dull. And it makes forgiveness more possible for me." In the last few years, I have begun to have occasional transcendent experiences while I'm meditating. This state resembles the kind of ecstatic state described by the mystics in many lands through all the ages. For a time, I lose my sense of self. I'm no longer a separate being with all the wants and needs and identification with ego that come with being in this state of mind, the one that we agree to call reality. Instead, I'm a simple awareness. And in this timeless, placeless state of being, I experience joy and freedom like I had not known was possible. It was in this state of pure awareness that I first understood the profound meaning of forgiveness. I often think in images now. I see people as energetic balls of light living in a human body, expressing themselves through the vehicle of their personalities. I understand the state of wholeness as being totally open and unobstructed, so that the energy of life can flow through us freely. In my meditations, I now imagine becoming a clear vessel, allowing the energy of love to move in and through me and then out again into the world. All of the grievances that we hold against one another, against ourselves, I picture these as little snags in our energy field. They're a form of resistance that, like little eddies in a river, divert and sidetrack the free flow of our life energy. Each grudge we cherish inhibits us from loving as completely and living as fully and joyfully as we might otherwise. Forgiving is the process by which we let go of these little snags and unclog the system, releasing our hold on our righteous indignation about the wrongs done to us, frees us up to become clearer channels of love into the world. It becomes more possible to live in the present moment and to feel compassion instead of aggravation. When we forgive ourselves and release the grievances we have been holding, we become freer to bless other people, to see in them the spark of the divine, their oneness with love, and give them permission to forgive as well. So as I bring us to a close, I invite you to consider areas in your own life where you are holding on to grievances, to hurt. I invite you to consider what it would be like if that energy were freed up. These might be large things, but they might be really small things too. I wish for each of you relief from the guilt and shame that you carry, because we all carry some degree of guilt and shame. May you find a way to lighten your load of secret debts and free up that wasted energy to bring more compassion and more joy into your own heart, into your friendships, and all the important relationships in your life. And by doing so, may we begin to circulate more compassion and joy out into the wider world. Amen. Blessed be. Peace. Salam. Shalom.